Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts as we welcome our guests here on the edge, the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Today, we got Margie McCumstie.
How are you? How are
you? Look it. She done called you guys out. She said the brains. You know, Margie's got a beautiful job in a strange kind of way. She helps people that and their families, whether they're celebrating a wedding or they are passing to the great beyond in a funeral. She is a celebrant.
That's right.
We call them officiants here. I'm one. I married people, and you know it was odd because when I got ordained, I married my friends and I buried my brother within the same year. So it's a lot of responsibility, but you don't know what to say to people when someone has passed on. You know, you don't want to say, I understand, because you really don't understand. You don't want to say anything. My condolences is just a blank statement. So it's a lot. And then when you don't know the individual that you are praying over and they're, you know, despise, how do we get in the brains of those families that we say the right things to really comfort them? So you are a grief recovery specialist, but you also have had some very challenging things happen to you in your life as well. So why don't we start with that, and then we will move into all the other beautiful things that you do. Welcome to On the Edge, Margie.
Oh, thank you so much, April, and thank you for listening and watching today, brains. I really appreciate being here, and I love your podcast. So
thank you.
I am very honored and privileged to do the sort of work I do, and I guess, you know, all the different things we've been through in life lead us to where we are. And I was raised in a very Catholic household. And while I don't consider myself to be Catholic anymore, I definitely have that love of ritual and ceremony and believe in the power of that to be able to really transmute our feelings and emotions and to really celebrate someone's life. I've been through a lot of different things in my life, ranging from, you know, I had a hysterectomy when I was just 18 years old.
Wow.
That was an oophorectomy actually. So they took the ovaries as well as the uterus. And that was very hard, you know, for somebody who really wanted to be a mum, that was a very difficult journey for me to go through and really challenged my own perceptions of what it was to be a woman. I really worked through that, and I've become, you know, I do burlesque dancing. I came second in the burlesque dancing competition here in Newcastle in Australia. I love that. I just love that, you know, I could be free and express myself and just be me. And I think that's really important. So I guess most recently, I suppose I became a celebrant, and about 5 years ago now, I've been doing it for. And in that time, I performed lots of weddings and naming days for children and funerals as well. And I really had a passion for funerals. Like, I really felt it was a bit of a vocation, and people sort of look at you a bit weirdly, like maybe there's something wrong with you. But I just love being able to support a family and also to honor and celebrate that person's life. And then 2.5 years ago, my dad fell very ill, and we went over to his town, which is about 5 hours away from where I live. And we went to visit him because we knew that things weren't great. And when we got there, he didn't answer the door like he normally did. And, you know, we rang the doorbell repeatedly, and we knew that Dad kept the door unlocked for the ambulance service in case, because he lived alone, if he was awake. So we tried the door and it was unlocked, and we went in and I called out, "Dad." And then I heard his voice, and it was coming from the bathroom, and my brother was with me. He said, "Don't come in, send Charlie, send my brother." So Charlie went in, and Dad had been stuck in the bathroom for like overnight, and it was very cold. And we got an ambulance to come, and Dad was really frightened to go to the hospital because he said, you know, if I go in, I might not come out. And you know what? He was right. 5 weeks later, Dad died, and I was by his side when he passed, and then I had the great honor of performing Dad's funeral a week later. So some of the work I do, I work with people who are terminally ill to prepare their funeral before they die, so they know how they're going to be remembered, and they also get a sort of a sense of closure. They get to hear their life summarized back to them, you know, and so yeah, it's really such an incredible gift to give them. So I did that for Dad, and I remember reading Dad his funeral ceremony 24 hours before he died. And then, yeah, just that one day later, he died, and I was holding his hand as he died. And that funeral was probably one of the hardest, the hardest funeral I've ever done in my life, but also the biggest honour, like just the most incredible honour. And I have so many families say, "Oh, no, I couldn't do a eulogy. I just couldn't." And the thing is that, you know, it's such a gift to you as well as to them if you can make yourself do it. You were asking before about what people say, how do people, you know, what you should say to people to help comfort them. I think so often we need to stop worrying about what to say and start thinking about what we can do to listen, and hugs, because most of all,
you can't hug nobody with the COVID, girl. You can't give, you can't even get them to get in the funeral home. We had a friend of ours pass away, and they did the funeral. I was all the way at the back by the graves, right? Six people at an outdoor funeral contracted COVID. So they don't want to get close, but you know, it's different. You know, African American culture, it used to be where we would fall all out, girl. I mean, be at the funeral home screaming and hollering, trying to get all in the coffin with people. Yeah. But people have changed. The emotion around death has stiffened. Mm-hmm. It's not as lubricant as it was, where people would just, you know, go in every direction. They've come to terms with the fact of the transition. They've, you know, you go to funerals now, or I do, and hardly people are crying. You may have the wife, the immediate family, but all of the extended people, no. And then here in New Orleans, we have a culture of, it's really a celebration, where we go down the street with umbrellas and, you know, we do a dance and we have the handkerchief. We really, we really celebrate the life, because we know that the soul has separated from the spirit. Mm-hmm. We know that it is okay. We know that it's a transition period, and we know that we're all going to go. What do you say to people that have small children? You know, I like to ask that question because young children have to understand this without being afraid.
Yeah. Well, I first of all, I love that. I love that people can celebrate like that. So often funerals aren't celebrated in that way. And I think it's really great if they can be. And I think also with young children, you know, involve them, you know, obviously at an age appropriate level. But when people say, "Oh, I'm not going to bring my children to the funeral, they're too young," mm-hmm. I don't agree with that at all. I think, no, let the children come. You know, I encourage the children to write cards or letters to be placed on the casket, you know, do whatever they need to do to be part of the ceremony, to say goodbye, to celebrate the life, that sort of thing. There's a fabulous book called Water Bugs and Dragonflies. And it's a children's book, but it is so meaningful. And I often give the thing that sort of I've held on to very much so in my grief is that my dad's not really dead, like and all the people I've loved, like, he's just changed form,
but then you have to take into consideration and respect others that don't believe that.
Well, that's right. That's
You know,
right.
there's a lot of people out there that don't believe in reincarnation. They don't. They think that, you know, when you in the ground, that's it. So
And
you have
that's
to
when,
honor that too.
but that's when you talk about how you keep them alive in your memory. You know,
Right.
the love you have for them stays in your heart. Their memory stays in your heart, and they stay alive in that way instead. And so it's a different way of thinking about it. You
When
know.
you are not, burying people, you're marrying people.
Yes, sure am.
So tell me one of the, do you remember or recall one of the most special weddings that you ever performed?
Oh, look, I did a wedding that I absolutely just loved performing. It was a wedding between an Indian Australian woman whose family were Hindu and an Australian man, a white Australian man. And so they wanted to have the two weddings. So they invited me to the Hindu wedding, and it was fabulous. I felt like I was in a
Did you
Bollywood
get
movie.
your Mindy? Did you get your henna?
Yes, had the henna tattooing, and it was just fabulous. We were all dancing, and it was incredible celebration. I absolutely loved it. And then the very next day, I then performed the traditional white wedding. And I remember at the reception for the first wedding, the Hindu wedding, that I said afterwards, I said, "Oh, I feel like I'm in a Bollywood movie." And then
Oh,
the very
yeah.
next day, I was at the other wedding that I performed, and I was talking to some of her friends and cousins that had flown over from India at the time, and this is before COVID, and they were saying, "Oh, we feel like we're in a Hollywood movie." And I said, "That's
Wow.
what I said yesterday, but it was a Bollywood movie." And it was just one of
Yeah,
the most
it's great.
glorious cultural experiences.
I know, I've been to, several different cultural, but when you get to taste the food and you look at this ceremony and what is universal is love,
That's it. That's it.
family, camaraderie, understanding, and you hope longevity for the bride and groom.
Yes. And there's a lot of symbolism and ritual, you know, like they did things that we don't do, but they were beautiful and really symbolic. And then we do things that they don't do, and they're symbolic as well. I think that search for meaning is it's a core thing in terms of ceremonies and weddings and funerals as well. So yeah,
Is
very
and do you
important.
do christenings of children and baptisms?
Yes, but they don't have a religious component. So they're naming days, and oh, they're just
So what,
glorious.
so a naming day is kind of like
Yeah, like a baptism, but without the religious component, unless they want that, in which case I'm happy to put that into it as well. But a lot of people, you know, aren't religious, and but they do want to celebrate and welcome their child to the world, so which is beautiful.
Right, and they want to honor whatever religious doctrine that they believe. So, Maggie, what do you do for fun and recreation?
Well, apart from the burlesque dancing, and I love swimming and aquaerobics and things like that.
Ooh. So, Maggie, you wrote a book, you were telling me.
Yes,
How long
yes.
ago? A couple years ago?
Yeah, so after my dad died in 2019, at New Year's Eve, I made one of those resolutions that I don't normally make, and that was to write a
Wow.
book and to you know, acknowledge and tribute, make it a tribute to my dad. So I wrote this book. It's called Beloved:
Wow.
Remembering, Discovering, and Creating Who You Are as You Journey Through Life.
Wow.
And I did a dedication in the front to Dad. It says, "To Arthur Charles McCumstie, my dad, you faced it all and you stood tall and did it your way. Thanks for the love and inspiration. This book is about my way." And yeah, so
Sounds like a Frank Sinatra song. You know Frank
yes,
Sinatra? I did it my way.
we did. We had that song at Dad's funeral, and Dad had, I don't know how, but Dad had thought he'd never heard the song before. And I played it for him on his deathbed, and he said, "It's like the song's been written for me. It's like every word." I know a lot of people feel that way about the song, but my dad definitely did. So that's why I wrote the tribute like that. So yeah, so I covered a lot in my journey. And because I'd covered remembering, discovering, and creating who you are, I looked at who I was as a child before, you know, all the things that happen in life happen to us. And so remembering who I was at my core, you know, free, fully expressed, you know, where before fear and all the, you know, things that happen in life get involved. So I remembered who I was at my core. Then I looked at discovering. So I looked at who I became through the course of my life. So who I came to know myself to be. So a strong, resilient woman, you know, somebody who could overcome obstacles. So all the things that happen in life happen for a reason. And if we can learn the lesson from those, then we grow and we become stronger. So, you know, I was raped about 15 years ago, and then, you know, coming through that, coming through having had my hysterectomy, coming through I had serious, very severe depression at one point, and coming through that, and being able to understand who I am in the world. And then the third part is about creating who you are in this world, who you are in this world and for this world. And I just think that's really important, is that we think about the contribution we want to make in the world. So part of what I did with the book was I decided I wanted to donate $1 from every book sold to 5 different charities. So $5 from every book goes to different charities. And that was really important to me. So I thought about, because people always say to me, oh, Margie, you're so inspiring. And I'm an inspirational speaker. I do speak at different places. And, you know, like, okay, thank you. That's lovely. But there are so many inspiring women in this world, and I wanted to be able to shine a light on some of those. So the book, the proceeds of the book, some of those go to 5 different charities, as I said.
What type of charities do you support?
Yeah, so I support the Cambodian Children's Trust, which was started by an Australian woman named Tara Winkler, who went to Cambodia, saw the state of orphanages over there, saved a whole lot of children from an orphanage that wasn't working properly, and then realised that a lot of the children that were in her orphanage actually had families, and that they weren't actually orphans. Their families were just so poor that they took their children there so that they would have a better life. So she's now dismantled the orphanage model, and she has set up like a village hive model where she looks after and supports the communities and helps them. So that was really important. I support a charity called Prajwala. There's an incredible woman named Sunitha Krishnan. And so many years ago, a group of 8 men gang raped her and bashed her severely to the point where she became deaf in one ear. And she's in India. And in India, there's a lot of shame around sex and rape and things like that, and she really wanted to be able to end sex slavery in India. And so she started this organization called Prajwala, which means eternal flame. And I've got a statistic here that 18 million women and children are involved in sexual slavery in India alone. 200,000 women and children are forced into prostitution each year, and 65,000 children are trafficked each year, with some of these being as young as 5 years old. So she works on prevention, protection, rescue, rehabilitation, and reintegration. Mm. And so I was really, you know, wanting to like look after and support them as well. Then there's another organization called Rafiki Mwema, and they're over in Kenya. And there was a woman named Anne-Marie Tipper. She's from the UK, and she'd been donating to orphanages in Kenya for quite a while. And then she went to visit, and she realized that the money she was donating wasn't making it to the children. So she stayed in Kenya for a while and started an organization called Play Kenya, because she was a trauma therapist. And but then she realized that there were young girls who were waiting on legal proceedings and were either stuck in institutions or they were in a dangerous situation at home because family members had raped them, and they were still stuck there. So in 2011, she organized a therapeutic home for sexually abused girls under the age of 12, and that's Rafiki Mwema. And then after about a year, it wasn't doing very well financially. And a woman named Sarah Rosberg, who is an Australian woman, she went over there and realized this. So she came back to Australia and she immediately organized a big fundraiser and raised enough money to keep the orphanage going for another 3 months. And then she got some help from some celebrities over here in Australia, Constance Hall and Celeste Barber. And they raised lots of money to help keep that going. And it's been going ever since. Then my fourth one, I have five. My fourth one is Transcend, which is an Australian organization supporting young transgender and non-binary youth in Australia. So in Australia, if you're a young person and your family's supporting you in going through transgender transition, then you have to go on to puberty blockers. But to do that, you've got to go to the family court, and it becomes really expensive. And every step along the way, you have to go and get legal support, and it costs a lot of money. So they decided to start advocating for transgender rights and to help change that system in terms of how much money and frustration and time and delays it costs, because there's no time to delay with stopping puberty, obviously. And it's a mother and daughter team that run that. So the mother actually had twin boys, and then she soon realized that one of her boys was actually a girl. And so her daughter Georgie Stone, is now the first transgender actor on Neighbours.
Oh,
I don't know if you have Neighbours there in America, but
probably on Netflix or something like that, but that's very progressive. I see that you are very involved in the DEI space, which is on everybody's tongue right now, diversity, equity, and inclusion. People want to be acknowledged the way they want to be acknowledged. Just
that's right.
because we want to say it, but I tell people it gets a little confusing. Until you introduce yourself to me that way, I have no idea of what to do. But to extract a lot of prejudice, misunderstanding, and ignorance. Ignorance just means not knowing.
That's it, exactly.
Had to
And
move
the
into that
fifth
title.
charity, April, the
Oh,
fifth
okay.
charity, because I don't want to miss it, is that in Australia we had an incredibly flamboyant, wonderful, funny, charismatic woman. She was an Australian star of stage and screen. Her name was Jeannie Little, and Jeannie Little was just extraordinary. And I always loved her as a child. She was just so crazy and amazing and wonderful. Anyway, her daughter Katie Little really supported her mother when she was diagnosed with Alzheimer's in 2009. And it wasn't long before Jeannie Little was pretty much unresponsive, unable to talk. And just before my book was released, Jeannie Little actually died. And she set up a business called a charity called the Jeannie Little Alzheimer's Research Fund, and they raise money for NEURA, which is the Neuroscience Research Australia. And there's so many people who have been affected by dementia or Alzheimer's, and that money goes towards research for that. So some really important charities, very close to my heart. I mean, there's so many incredible women doing amazing work
They
out there.
are. I mean, but that's some deep stuff, everything from rescuing, children that are being trafficking to mental health, everything. I mean, you're just really covering the gamut. And I'm so glad that there are people like you in the world that understand the difference between life and death, that excel, celebrate joy, that are giving and caring. How do you want to be memorialized, Maggie?
Well, look, I think my book is probably one of my legacies, so that, people will remember, or if they want to remember me, they can read it and they can get that
Oh, is it
message.
on Amazon?
Yes, it's on Amazon, Booktopia, Fish Pond. You can buy the ebook version, or you can buy the paperback version. So that's one way. But I guess the other thing is just I really want to spread love as much as I can in the time that I've got. And I think you have a very similar kind of passion, April.
I do.
I was going to say, like when you were saying about all the charities, I thought, well, yes, I have a big heart, but then so do you, because you give a platform for incredible people to come onto your podcast and to
Thank
share with
you.
all the brains,
I
what
do,
we
and
do.
because my legacy is I want to be known as a conduit for those who have, want, and need I want to be the vehicle of communication. I want to be a place where people stop and listen. You know, whether they agree or disagree, they don't have to be disagreeable.
Yeah.
But at least I want you to take the time to listen. You would be amazed at what would land and deposit in that brain. And, you know, again, when I marry people, you know, they come to April meeting because we talk about it. I've been married 37 years. So, you know, I think I know it all, but I know what good love is.
Yeah.
You know, and I know what it is to not have any regrets when you die, you know. So if you are in a tender place where you think you're passing, if you have the opportunity, now's the time. Go ahead and say what you got to say. Do what you got to do. Ask the questions. If you have any questions of someone that is passing, now's the time. Because tomorrow is not promised. We only have the present. Thank you so much, Maggie. Excuse me. Tell my friends how to get in contact with you and, you know, your website. I want them to work with you. I want them to get a copy of the book.
Yes.
And I want them to hire you to marry them.
Fabulous. That's great. Thank you, April. I really appreciate talking with you today. And all the details will be in the show notes and everything. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So give us your email though. I mean, give us your website.
Okay. So I have three websites. I have, www.metamorphos.com.au, which is my celebrants website. I have www.lovelegacy.com.au, which is I write customized eulogies for people all around the world for funerals. And I have www.marginakunsti.com.au, which is my speaker website.
Wow.
And yes, and you can follow
it's
me
on all over the planet, brain. She's doing it big time. So what we want you to do is we want you to love, like, and share. We want you to share this information with people. She gave us some great information on some nonprofit organizations that you might want to consider contributing to. You know, they can, you'll be surprised with $5, $10, $15 a month can do. It can change people's lives. It can provide food sometime for weeks. It can provide medicine, a roof over their head.
Education.
Education. Sometimes it helps with legislation. So give, brains. That's what money is there for. It's fluid. It's got to be constant. The more you give, the more you have. Believe me. Trust me. I'm a witness. Thank you so much, Maggie.
Thank you so much, April. Love to everybody from Australia.
Bye, brains.
Bye, brains.